I'm looking forward to that. But I did want to just take a moment and note for the record the passing of a great American and an extraordinary Marylander. Governor, you and I on Saturday went to the funeral for Sergeant Shriver, passed away here in his native Maryland. I thought it was a really incredible funeral, led by his family, but Vice President Biden and President Clinton and First Lady Michelle Obama were there, and Oprah Winfrey, and Bono got up and played. I thought the governor was going to get up and play, too, but...
I was going to do the prayer of St. Francis, but Bono had nothing else to sing.
But it's an extraordinary event because each of his kids got up and spoke, and Mark Shriver, who served here in the legislature, described, he said, his daddy said, even when he was stripped down to the core by that horrible disease, Alzheimer's, just down to his basic goodness, said last year he was bringing his dad early in the morning across the Chesapeake Bay Bridge, and the sun was rising as they were driving. And his dad, ravaged by Alzheimer's, said to Mark, you know, I'm really looking forward to meeting the person that created that sunrise. And anyway, the whole event was something that was just incredible, I thought. And I just wanted to make sure that people realize that in recent memory, nobody's done more for public service and fixing things. All of us in the audience, President Clinton said, all you men in the audience must feel about 2 inches high when you hear about Sergeant Shriver's accomplishments, because it's a long, long list. Achieved monumental goals, and I always liked him because he had such a sense of decency and civility. And he treated his wife Eunice in such an incredible way. So he was a man of faith, but he was also a man of family, and I'm proud that he came from Maryland and lived in Maryland and contributed to our great state and touched each of us with his legacy, and I think the values he represents are timeless. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Comptroller. Madam Treasurer?
I just want to endorse what the Comptroller said. I don't know if you remember, but the Shrivers lived in District 16 for a little while before they moved west to District 15. And I remember there was a time when I guess they had come back from France, and we were getting into an election year, and I got a call on the telephone, and this man said, "Hello, my name is Sergeant Shriver." I said, "Oh, certainly it is," thinking, "Oh yeah, right." Said, we are new Democrats who are coming back to your area. I said, yeah. Said, would you like to have a reception at our home? And so the District 16 team, I don't mean to inject partisan politics into this, but found ourselves in the Shriver's home. Timberlawn, there was a name, off of the Rockville Pike.
Mm-hmm.
And they had just invited their neighbors in because they said that they hadn't been used to being... in Democratic things in Bethesda recently, and thought they'd like to meet the folks. I just thought that was so charming. And I had forgotten it until this very moment.
Did you let Governor Mandel know you were having the meeting?
No, I don't recall. It was just us home folk. No, a great man, great family that accomplished a great deal. I saw a story the other day of how many people have now gone through the Peace Corps all over the world and in the United States and are still dedicated, even when they get out of the Peace Corps, to the same ideals, principles, and goals throughout their lives. And it really is a very important story that we should all remember and try to emulate.
Great man. You saw a lot of those people there wearing their Peace Corps shoulder patches and the like at the funeral. I had occasions at, you know, catch an Orioles game with Sergeant Shriver once, and had dinner with him a couple of times through his son Mark, and just a wonderfully optimistic and loving man, full of energy and hope about a new tomorrow. And We salute his entire family for shouldering this loss with such grace and dignity and class. It really was a tremendous send-off. Okay, well, let's get to the first agenda item. I see the speakers here, so we're going to go out of order a little bit and go to the Department of General Services. And the speaker's here to talk to us about item one.
First of all, thank you, Governor, members of the Board of Public Works. I appreciate the opportunity to be here this morning. And I do appreciate the words said about, obviously, Sergeant Shriver and the family. Mark served with us in the General Assembly. And for people of my generation, if I could just Ken for a second, you know, the call to public service really came from Kennedy, his brother-in-law, the president, and young people like Sergeant Shriver. They were role models for those who serve in public life today, particularly if you're in my age category, which is rapidly gaining steam here. But I do want to testify about the expansion, or really the renovations and the improvements that need to be taking place in the low office building. We've gone through with Secretary Collins, Department of General Services. We're very grateful that Secretary Foster has put the money in the budget. We believe we can save money if we consolidate it for this year's period of time.
Actually, Mr. Speaker, I put the money in the budget.
Secretary Foster, I just want to say this. I want to thank the governor. That was a faux pas on my part. I'm sorry. Thank you, Governor.
It's totally understandable.
We were briefed by Secretary Foster the other day, and I want to...
totally understandable. She's a hard person to work for.
So I do want to thank you, Governor, and everyone, and I hope this meets with approval of the Board of Public Works. Secretary Collins has worked very closely with us, and I think we have a project coming in under budget if we can get the money appropriated this year.
Anybody have questions on this item? Controller moves approval. Seconded by the Chair.
Governor, thanks again. My faux pas. Thank you.
We go on. How about the? Should we do the balance of the Department of Juvenile Services agenda items? Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. The Department of Juvenile Services has 23 items remaining on our agenda. Items 1, 2, 5, 7, and 8 have been slightly modified. And I'd be glad to answer any questions on any of these items.
Any questions? Okay, on the balance of the Department of General Services item. Treasurer moves approval, seconded by the Comptroller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. I guess we'll go back.
You want to go backwards? You want to go transportation? Or is there something to keep out of the room?
Is that what they're here for?
No, I think it was school construction. That's on the Secretary's agenda, so we'll have to hold that item. So.
Okay. How about, why don't we go to... we're going to hold everything on the Secretary's agenda?
No, well, we can do a Secretary's agenda now. I was just...
Let's do the Secretary's agenda items, except for the biggest one, which is thank you.
Good morning, Governor. Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, we have 12 items on the Secretary's agenda. There are two reports of emergency procurements. Item one is the IAC's recommendation on the capital improvement program for public schools for next year, so we will hold item one until... after the break, but we can answer questions on 2 through 12 and the two emergencies.
Any questions?
There's muttering over here. Just to point out that item number 10 is the follow-up on the energy performance leases that we discussed at the last meeting, and item 12 is the funding for the video lottery terminals. Through the process which you all approved at the last meeting, we have gained approximately $1.5 million over any alternative methods, which is good regardless of what one thinks about the actual substance of the expenditure. But I don't think we have to approve.
No. We have to accept the report.
accept the report.
And just to point out another item that followed up, item two, was the Montgomery County High School that the board had approved the transfer last year, contingent on coming back. And, in fact, Montgomery County and the schools have come back, and Montgomery County will be reimbursing the state the money they owed. So that all worked out well.
And, Mr. Speaker, I'm talking about 12 since... Governor, thinking about what the Speaker had said about the previous items, I too would like to thank our sister agency, the Department of Budget and Management, and all the folks for all the work that was done on the COPS to get the savings. Thank you.
So the Comptroller moves approval of the Secretary's agenda, except for item one, which we're holding. Second by the Treasurer, all opposed, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. The ayes have it. We now move to program open space. I believe Lori Schwartz is here on item number four. Pierce's something or other, Ms. Schwartz? Yes?
Governor. Members. I'm Lori Schwartz, Executive Director of Waterfront Partnership of Baltimore, and I'm here with Susan Flanagan to speak on behalf of Pierce's Park program open space item that we're pleased to see. The overall cost of the park is $2 million. That's not all construction. We're including an endowment that private funding will help pay for to make sure that we have funding through the years to maintain the park. But this is a small park on the east side of the harbor that we expect will meet needs of the growing numbers of families that are choosing to locate and stay and raise their families in Baltimore. We're very excited about the park. It'll be built with all natural materials and turn a currently asphalt and concrete area into a lovely park.
Great. With surface that's permeable, is that the right word? Permeable or impermeable? Stuff the stormwater can flow through?
Exactly. We're right. Exceeding all the stormwater requirements.
And this is named. This park will be named after the great Pierce Flanagan.
Exactly. A great supporter of all of us and all good things, especially public transit, even though a road construction company, Pierce was a terrific supporter of public transit and all good things in the city and region.
Great, ma'am. Okay.
Is Ms. Flanagan here?
Susan Flanagan is here, Pierce's widow and mother of Pierce the Fourth, who is running Pierce Flanagan and Sons Company now.
Hi, Susan. Welcome. I just wanted to say I really like this project, and I hope I can come up and look at the park at some point. And, you know, I just particularly like it because you've got program open space, but you also have this partnership with the family or some of the businesses and citizens, and you're creating something which is very valuable for the community, and I think it's a good model, I guess, for that. Hopefully your generosity will stimulate more of these around the state as we move forward. So hats off. Job well done.
Thank you, and we'll be sure to get the date of the groundbreaking on everyone's calendar. We're still aiming for spring construction. There's no reason at this point why we won't make it. The private funding is there. City is leasing us the land. That's been approved. The naming ordinance is on second reader, soon to be third. So everything's lined up for spring groundbreaking.
This is going to go down as a significant step forward, too, in the community. It will help make the community, not just serve the community, I think. There are a lot of folks I know who are teetering on leaving suburbia and coming back back to the city. I think this really makes a big difference.
We hope so. We expect that this really will meet the needs. That's how this whole park came about, was we were approached by families. Right. Who have chosen to live and stay and raise their kids on the east side of downtown and ask for some additional green space, which is a reasonable request. These families are working with the public school system, with their neighborhood associations, to make Baltimore a better place. So.
Now, Susan, the two of you were one of those teetering types with lawns and grass, right?
Yes.
Bay. I live very close to Roy Park in the Bay. And one other, and I'm going to take that at a time, but one really interesting thing about the park is that it has many components. We'll have sculpture. We're having hum phones scattered so that children can play with words. We have a willow tunnel for children. But it will also be enough open space. It's approximately an acre that not only a family but an office worker would be very comfortable sitting. And it's going to be very pretty and very all-inclusive.
And what was Pierce's connection?
Actually, one of the initial, maybe the initial, was our daughter Emily, who does live currently still downtown with her family. And Pierce became a member of the Waterfront Partnership, and Emily was literally pushing the strollers around downtown, saying, "Oh, there should be more space, more open space." And she was looking at all these buildings going up, you know. Commitment to open space, and that's how it started. And Pierce put her in contact with Lori, and then when Pierce died, I think the emails were
immediate.
Ferocious that it, they had to do it and to name it for Pierce.
Excellent. Pierce and Emily's part. Wonderful. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Susan, thank you.
Thank
good
you.
Seeing you as always.
Sir.
Ms. Schwartz, good seeing you as always.
Sir.
Anybody have any questions on program open space? Controller moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. We now go to the Department of Budget Management.
Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Controller, good morning. There are three items on the Department of Budget Management's agenda for today. And I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Three items.
I do have a question actually on number three.
Item three. Okay.
The energy performance offices utility bill management services.
Right. Yes.
And the question simply is this going to allow us now if we want to issue debt and have it paid for by the savings? This gives us an objective basis on
absolutely.
Which to measure the
absolutely.
Savings.
Yes, ma'am. That's one of the objectives of this whole system.
That's great. Because so it's not so loosey-goosey as it was. And that's very helpful, I think. Thank you.
Okay.
Anything else? Treasurer moves approval. Seconded by the Comptroller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. We move to the University System in Maryland.
Good morning. Jay Evans, representing the University System of Maryland. We have 17 items on the agenda today. I'm here to answer any questions.
Governor, I have a question.
Sure.
Item 9. Just let us know what that is.
I'd like to bring up Mr. Sterling.
For the record, Jim Sterling, University of Maryland College Park.
Can you, possible, walk us through the technical factors that were considered in this procurement and the reasons for skipping past the lower bid? I understand that you're recommending we approve this contract for Bowie State's Student Union Building to Holder Construction, the Georgia company. They have an exceptional track record. I know they built Salisbury's, I think, the new teacher education technology or the new Purdue Business School building, maybe both of them. So I believe that they do quality work, but the other two bidders have very good reputations also, Gil Bain and Skanska. And Gil Bain was 17%, well, let's see, Holder was 17% higher than Gil Bain and 20% higher than Skanska. These are not unknown entities, these other folks. How can, why did they get skipped over?
No, actually, I would agree with your characterization of Gilbane and Skanska. We've worked with them on many projects in the past with success. But in the process of doing a technical evaluation on a project like this, we look at a very specific set of evaluation criteria that are targeted to this particular type of project, where we're trying to look at experience on projects of similar size and scope and complexity fitness, close to match to what we're trying to build as we can find. And the kinds of things we would look at for a technical evaluation would be the team experience and the key personnel, their track record and whether they've worked together on similar projects, the experience and past performance of the firm, whether they have experience in this particular case on LEED certification and building information modeling, project planning, and economic benefits to the state. I mean, those are the major factors that we looked at. I do have with me Enrique Salvador, who's our assistant director for capital projects, who happened to do the evaluation in this particular case.
Terrific. No, because you mentioned that you've worked with Gilbane and Skanska. They've built big projects. They're not small companies by any means. I'm just surprised that the high bid by quite a bit in a competition like this among these three, I don't know the other companies, but these three, holders hundreds of thousands of dollars more.
I'm going to let Mr. Salvador talk about the technical values, but we did see some differences in the price proposals. Obviously, the bottom line is there's quite a separation, as you described. But for example, on pre-construction services, Skanska had, as an element of their price proposal, only about $20,000 toward performance of all the services we require for pre-construction. That's something we would normally expect to see in the range of $250,000 to $300,000 for a project of this size. So it's sort of a false bargain. We think that there are some problems with the way they price the project out. But let me let Mr. Salvador talk about the technical factors.
Sure. Good morning. As Jim says, we evaluated the proposal submitted. The committee is not aware of the prices. The charge of the committee is to look at the tenure proposal based on the factors. We evaluate the proposal, the quality of the proposal, and after the process is completed, we open prices. In this particular case, we have a situation where a particular firm submitted basically pre-construction services for free. We believe that at the end of the day, the university is going to have to probably pay in some manner, either change orders later, or perhaps paying for supplemental staff. So if you look at the prices of the firms, the other firms are also reputable firms. If you look at the prices, you have actually holder proposals from all the firms that we believe that price credit correctly is the least expensive. You look at the example of, you have Whiting and Turner, you have a number of other companies there that are very reputable, and we believe that this is the best value to the university. I personally have been referenced for Gilbane. I'm working with Gilbane on a number of projects.
Uh-huh.
I was responsible for the Shade of Tree, Camille Candle project.
Mm-hmm.
Great project, by the way. Thank you.
Sorry.
Terrific project.
That's a Shady Grove.
Camille Candle. Yeah.
Great point.
That was done by my group. We were pushing LEED when LEED wasn't sexy. That was the first.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first project that was LEED certified. I believe State of Maryland first gold project. So that's one of the criteria, LEED experience for the team too. So we believe that this is the best value to the university. And unfortunately, this economic situation, and we see this kind of pricing. We just can't anticipate that somebody is going to provide certain services for free. And we believe that is an anomaly. This is typically doesn't happen. It could happen the way that the process is established. Again, we don't know the prices until the technical evaluation is complete. The technical evaluation is complete. Prices are converted to points. We add points, and that's the way it works.
But aren't they bonded? If we picked Gilbane, for example, because they're $400,000 cheaper than Holder, you don't have any doubt that Gilbane would stick to their agreement. And can't we hold them to that if we have it properly bonded?
I can let Jim talk about the bond issue. I can tell you that if they have only $20,000 to perform reconstruction services, that's not enough for one estimate of one phase.
What if they really wanted the business and were aware of that, and they were basically saying, we're going to do what's necessary and we're going to do it for free? I mean, goodness gracious, why are we jumping in and negotiating against ourselves here?
I think it's really a matter of how much confidence you have in that playing out the way perhaps you'd like to see it play out. But it's, you know, it's sort of a get what you pay for exercise. We're very concerned that when we have somebody comes in with an extremely low proposal for services that we know are going to require a level of effort considerably greater than what they've proposed, that we're likely to end up with some problems of performance on the project.
Don't they sign an agreement they're going to do the work at the price? Or?
But that doesn't, of course, guarantee that we're going to get the performance that we expect.
Well, I'm not going to hold this all up here, but I just think that in these times we should take advantage of companies like Gilbane. This is not some unknown entity. As you said, they just built the biggest LEED certified building and public building in the state. And they did a good job. They have a great reputation. I'm not saying they should have been picked, but I certainly don't think high quality companies like that that we've worked with should sit back and say, well, gee, they're not going to perform. Obviously, they're going to perform. They're just going to pay for it themselves, I take it, because the economy is wringing those kinds of concessions out of bids. And it's a little concern to me that you guys say, gee, we're not going to go along with that. I mean, in the private sector, I assume a private sector entity would sign Gilbane up in a minute, or Skanska. I mean, they're not going to default. They're not going to come back and, I would be stunned if they came back and said, oh, we're going to charge you now with a big change order for our pre-construction. You know, why can't the state just say, no, you signed on the bottom line here, and you perform. And, you know, they're not going to, as you say, they're involved in a number of projects, so they're gonna produce because they want future business. Anyway, I just think it's, I guess I've talked myself into voting against it. But, you know, come on, guys, this is real money. It's a lot of it. It's not like well, whatever. I'm going to leave it to the governor and the treasurer, but I'm going to vote no because I think the bid is, you know, 20% higher than it should be.
If I can add one thing.
Sure.
I almost praise that you listed. I was responsible for most of them. I can tell you the performance and all those projects were not the same. There's some projects that the performance is different, and I think the difference is the quality of the personnel on that particular project, and we have made that the firm aware of that to integrate the companies, which explains the reasons.
Is that all in writing somewhere, or are you guys just kind of thinking back to your experiences subjectively about how you know, the Baltimore Student Services Center, was that good? Or Not so much. I mean, that sounds awfully fuzzy to me.
We have a very detailed process. I think we can show you stuff, all the reports and all the information. I think that, again, we try to be as objective as possible, and we evaluate the proposal that we see. That's the charge of the committee. And in this particular case, the proposal that we saw was rated accordingly. As I said before, I have been referenced for a number of those people because they have done good projects for me too. So it's not a firm, it's the particular proposal and the team that they proposed for the particular project.
Okay, well, just to conclude, Gil Bain has recently done the Aquaculture Lab at UMCES, the Physical Education Complex at Coppin, the UMBC Fieldhouse Expansion, the Compton Science Center, and Gunter Hall at Frostburg. I find it hard to believe that those have been bad experiences.
No, sir. No, sir. Yes. As I said before, it's the particular proposal for this particular project.
And I would just add that, you know, the charge of the evaluation committee is to look at the specifics that they put on the table in the proposal. And to be fair to everybody that's involved, that's what we have to stick to. So based on the specifics of those proposals, this evaluation committee rated them lower. Skanskin and Gilbane came in lower than Holder. We assign more weight to technical evaluation than we do to price, and I can understand your concern just because of the sheer numbers, but to be fair to all, I think we've recommended the right solution.
Can I ask, who sets the priorities of what buildings come next? Is that something you all leave to the individual colleges to come up with? Because they're in some pretty serious need of a new science building in Bowie, and yet we're cutting ribbons on Performing Arts Center and a Student Union building.
Yeah, usually the individual institutions submit to the systems office their priorities, and the system office coordinates their request. We support, my office supports the institution. My group works with all the institutions outside College Park, and we support any government because they have of us when they need an estimate, things like that. But the individual institutions request.
We're a little bit disadvantaged because we're not the facilities planners. Enrique is on the project management end.
Is anybody here from Bowie?
I don't think so.
No.
No. Sir.
But if you have any problems, I can pass any questions you have. Or, I deal with them every day.
Is there a separate list of priorities for auxiliary projects versus academic projects?
We can get that from the system office.
This is an auxiliary bond funded project, right?
Right.
For which the student fees have been collected.
Yeah, there is a separate list, and we can furnish it to your office.
I mean, I would assume that that has something to do with it.
With why it's this rather than
yeah.
That. Gotcha. Okay, that makes sense.
I would think. I don't know. But, I mean, I would think so. And I would think that the institutions and their students sort of husband the auxiliary funds that go into the bonds carefully because they're limited.
There's competition amongst the institutions for limited dollars.
Yeah.
Yes.
And this is the project, I gather, that came up through that process. And awarding it to Holder, I assume, is with the full knowledge that you could have possibly gotten it done cheaper and came to the conclusion that in this instance,
I'm certain it's not. Enrique had Bowie people on the evaluation.
Right, the evaluation committee includes always when we evaluate a project for a client institution, the committee's people. It includes people, usually at least two people, typically the facilities personnel and perhaps a dean. People are really interested in the project. And in this particular case, there were actually three people from Bowie State in the committee.
Yeah. And it did come in under the estimate, but I don't know.
The estimate is based on historical data. We've done
right.
Many of these projects over the years, so we have ranges that we would expect to see.
I think it's gone through extensive scrubbing. Obviously, we would always like to do things less expensively. But I'm not in the position to impose my judgment on.
All right. The University System Maryland agenda items, Governor moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. All opposed.
On this item, I'm opposed.
We'll separate out.
We'll separate out. I meant to call 9C. So we're on 9C. Governor moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. All opposed. Controller votes no on item 9C. Now, the balance of University System Maryland agenda items moved by the Comptroller, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed. The ayes have it. We move on now. Thank you, gentlemen, to the Department of Information Technologies.
Good morning, Governor.
How are you?
Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. I'm doing fine today, thank you. How are you? Elliot Schlanger, Department of Information Technology again. We have three items on the agenda this morning. I'd be happy to take any questions at this time.
Any questions?
That's still
very. Mr. Schlanger, I see that the Washington Business Journal in their article, I think, of today's date, ranked Maryland and Virginia in the top 10 in the Milken Institute State Technology and Science Index. Were you aware of that?
I was not, but thank you for the good news, sir.
Number one was our neighbors in Massachusetts. Number two was Maryland, our Maryland. Virginia had dropped 2 points.
Sorry,
they're going the other way. They dropped from, I think, 6 to 8 on the list, but together we're in the top 10.
Pretty good, huh?
For the innovation economy of which the President was speaking last night. All right. Treasurer moves approval, seconded by the Comptroller. All in favor, signal by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed. The ayes have it. Thank you, Mr. Schneider.
Thank you.
That's very good news.
The Department of Transportation.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, Beverly Swames Daly representing the Department of Transportation. We have 15 items today, and for the record, items 3C mod and 15 RP have been previously revised. Happy to answer your questions.
Governor, I had a question in general while you're looking through the list. The weather, you notice the weather's not so great out today.
Yes, I
know. A little iffy, isn't it? So what is the Department of Transportation doing not to change the weather, but to adapt? I must say, I noticed driving up on Route 50 that there clearly had been something had been sprayed on the road.
Right.
But then the rain seems to be washing it off.
That's what happens. Well, we obviously pre-treat based upon the predictions that we get. And this year has been especially difficult because I don't think any of the storms have actually come through as predicted by the National Weather Service. Fortunately, most of them have been to our benefit because they've actually hit the coast so far. But in this case, there was rain had been predicted through most of today, and the snow wasn't really supposed to start till this evening. But we do pre-treat actually well in advance of the storms. Unfortunately, when we get rain before we get the snow, it does exactly what you said. It, in fact, washes away a lot of the pretreatment and the salt. And we actually were salting up until about 10:30 this morning. We have now ceased that because I'm getting word that it's really all rain out there right now, but obviously to the degree that we would be able to pretreat now for the storm this afternoon will be much more limited. We currently have almost 1,000 people and 1,200 pieces of equipment out this morning. So yeah, they actually treat several days in advance when we are aware of a storm.
Is that the molasses sort of?
And it's one of the new mixtures that they're trying out is a beet juice combination. They're putting the traditional combos with something that helps it stick to the surface. But yes, this is in Maryland our challenge has always been quite frankly these mixed events as we call them. With the sleet, rain, snow. because the treatment for the snow doesn't work.
What about with rail? I mean, do they have the same level of vigilance?
They do what the railroads try to do and the transit lines is keep the trains running. So if you kind of keep the trains running to keep them from freezing, but obviously until you have a significant snow buildup or ice buildup, and you can no longer do that. So, so that's the way they handle it. And
I hesitate to ask, but beet juice?
Beet juice, yes. It's one of the more environmentally friendly types of solutions. So we used it last year in a couple of counties, and it worked pretty well, so we're using it more broadly this year. Obviously, there's a major concern. The more you salt, the more, you know, the negative effect, environmental effect. So it's finding that balance of salting and pre-treating.
But it does bring out the taste of the beet.
No, I haven't fallen yet to experience that what it tastes like. But it's interesting. There's some interesting things they're doing environmentally to deal with winter storms around the country.
Okay.
So it could be a challenge. Everyone would need to be very careful, because as this rain turns into snow, we are not, as you said, you don't have that pre-treatment that you're used to in a purely snow event. So you do have to be much more cautious.
It should be nasty for the rush hour this evening.
It could make it very nasty for the rush hour because of that.
Okay. Any other questions on the Department of Transportation? Okay. Treasurer moves approval, seconded by the Comptroller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The ayes have it. We move on now. We already did DGS.
Well, we're back to item one, and so I suggest that maybe you can take a break for a few minutes and change the room over, just for a very short minute, let you go out. And Washington County is here. They are the first school to go on the appeal.
Okay. Can I take a short break? Good stuff, I says about it. The second consecutive year, Maryland took the crown for human capital capacity, thanks to its highly educated workforce and high number of advanced degrees. So to begin the Hope-a-thon, keep hope alive. The Hope-a-thon, as we come out of the recession, our goal is to come out of it before other states, and by golly, we are not going to be deterred. Well, Dr. Grashmick, this is the first I've seen you, Dr. Grashmick, since the third year in a row of Maryland schools being named number one public school system in the United States of America. And the Milken Institute just came out with their ranking that has a second among the states in science and technology, behind only Massachusetts by a point. But one of their things that they say in here is that Maryland took the crown for human capital in terms of our highly educated workforce, what we've been willing to invest in education. Where is it? How spells? It's right here someplace. It's really good. I just read it to the treasurer. She liked it a lot. So anyway, are you proud? Are you happy?
Very. And I'm very proud of the whole educational community and the cohesiveness of the educational community in Maryland. So it's really wonderful. And, Governor, unprecedented. It's never happened.
Never happened before.
In 15 years, it's never happened.
Huh. Well, here's the I finally found the part. For the second consecutive year, Maryland took the crown for human capital capacity, thanks to its highly educated workforce and high number of advanced degrees. State's rankings in the indicators remain fairly consistent with the 2008 index. Other states, not to mention any names, are kind of slipping backwards. Because it's not enough just to cut. You have to protect the priorities that allow you to make the new economy yours. So let's bring up the best county school superintendent in the United States of America. All right off the bat. We're going in order of excellence of superintendents of school. No, I'm kidding. But we do start with Washington County. Doctor, how are you?
I am fine. Thank you very much.
Congratulations on an outstanding career of public service to the people of our state.
Thank you.
Baltimore City, of Lake Washington County, where you were named number one public school superintendent in the country, right?
Well, I was the American Association of School Administrators National Superintendent of the Year.
And they're smart people that make those awards.
Well, thank you. I appreciate those comments.
And tell us what you're going on to do.
Well, this will be my last, oh, it's Hopeathon today. This is my last Hopeathon before I move on to my new job, and then I'll start March 1st. And I just wanted to begin by thanking all of you. I look around this table. I've had unbelievable support as even before superintendent. Thank you for your leadership, Dr. Grasnick, and Controller Francho for not forgetting us out in the hinterlands. Nancy Cobb, thank you so much. And Governor, thank you very much for the support you've shown for education to me personally. And your passion for good education has really made a difference, I think, in this state. So thank you.
Thank you for your leadership.
So I'm here at the Hopeathon interviewing staff. Rob Rollins, who's our Director of Facilities, and Boyd Michaels, who's our Deputy Superintendent.
Morning.
And we're here again as before, and it's really interesting for us. I've been here the last several years, and it seems like I'm just, you know, it's Groundhog Day. I'm repeating the same things. But I will tell you that enrollment has grown again in Washington County for the 10th consecutive year. Growth is expected to continue for the next year to the tune of 250 students, which is large growth for us. The forms has increased. It's really interesting. The percent of students who qualify for free and reduced price meals continues to grow. It was at 27% when I arrived in Washington County in 2001, and now we're at 45%.
Why? To what is that attributed?
I think there's a number of reasons, but housing is less expensive in Washington County. There are multiple families living in one house, and we have the kind of housing where that's possible. And I just think there are a variety of reasons.
I guess my question really is putting these things together, are these new people moving in who are farms eligible, or is something happening in the economy of Hagerstown and the
Voice
county?
Voice close to the ground.
Right. I think probably a combination of both. To Dr. Morgan's credit, we certainly made a extra effort to make sure that we reached out and provided that opportunity for people to apply for free and reduced meals
and
reaching
out, yes.
So at least some of our increase was due to that, but obviously the economy is impacting us significantly, and we have a significant amount of housing available to low-income families.
But our unemployment continues to exceed the state average, we've been very high all along, one of the highest unemployment rates. So there's a lot of challenges in Washington County at this point in time. So we really need state participation in our capital projects now more than ever before, and with our growth, it's becoming critical in certain neighborhoods and certain schools. We do want to thank you for the support that you've shown for Antietam Academy thus far. We do need an additional $761,000 of state support beyond the IAC recommendations. We just had our ribbon-cutting ceremony, and it was just really heartfelt because the staff and students are really thrilled with this new facility. The children who attend Antietam Academy have grown up in very challenging circumstances and are the most vulnerable of our students in Washington County. So for the first time, these students who are very vulnerable and have grown up in challenging circumstances really have a school of their own. They have a permanent home. They've existed in portables, in basements, waterlogged basements, I might add. They've had not the best environment, and now, due to your support, we thank you very much for that. It's a beautiful school. I hope you'll come out and see it. By the way, this week, you'll be happy to know with the temperatures near zero and the cold that we had, the new geothermal HVAC system that we're using at that school worked perfectly. And the kids are so intrigued by that, too. And they've gotten to understand what geothermal is. They studied all this before they came to the school. So that's really made a difference. Ruth Ann Monroe Primary School, and by the way, this school is named after an African-American activist in our community and well-known parent of community figure. We're asking for an additional $1.7 million of state support beyond the IAC recommendation. The school is nearing completion. It'll open in the fall of 2011. It'll open this next school year. The school is a key component to a really essential redistricting effort that we went through. I'm surprised I'm still alive after that. It was very, very difficult redistricting, as many of them are. But this will now provide the adequate space for our growing student population. And then last but not least, our normal systemic renovations. And again, we thank you for the support that you've given us. When I arrived in Washington County in 2001, we had many schools with the original HVAC, with the original boilers from the 1950s. And I'm happy to say and proud to say that we've been able to replace all of those now, put on new roofs, and do the things that I think teachers and students deserve in a proper learning environment. So we're asking for $270,000 for the windows and doors at Northern Middle School, which was built in 1980. It has the original. And $396,000 for the roof replacement at Pleasant Valley. So, again, just to bring it full circle, very grateful, always grateful for the support I've had personally, professionally, and for the support Washington County has had. We believe we've been very responsible stewards of the capital improvement money, and we invite the state to continue to partner in our successes in Washington County.
Control?
Yes, I just wanted to compliment the superintendent. She is, my opinion, is our Heisman Trophy winner. And
actually, the award you get gets passed on, good. So it really is
yeah.
The Heisman.
Well, that's, you know, there's pinching pennies. and obviously, the superintendent for all the success that we've had. I also wanted to just salute Dr. Lieber, and I see Ms. Schaefer's here today. We have had a particular emphasis on school maintenance. And the concept there is that we don't have all the money that we had before to build new schools, and to the extent we can extend the useful life of existing facilities, we can save a lot of money and get a good education improvement on top of that, because there's so many studies out there that say when a school's well-maintained, everybody benefits, the teachers and the kids, and frankly, I think higher test scores and better education achievement. And I wanted to just applaud Dr. Lieber and Secretary Grasmick for focusing attention on this issue. I'm a little troubled by the report that we're looking at, Ms. Schaefer, just because it continues to talk about shrinking maintenance and operation budgets. The language, I think, at the local level, there's been a national trend toward reducing the percentage of total operating budget supplied to the routine maintenance of schools. And then Dr. Lieber in the report goes on to say that if we skimp on these maintenance positions, such as roof inspectors, we're cutting back on school safety. I think the quote is, could create safety issues in schools as they come to depend more on local fire departments to oversee their safety equipment and procedures. And to the extent Dr. Lieber points out that there's a positive relationship between the quality of the school facility and the quality of educational activity, I think that's terrific. And glad to see that beginning to be part of the fabric of your oversight. I guess it's kind of official confirmation of the obvious that we should take care of what we have. But somebody once said that nobody ever has a ribbon cutting for a new roof. And so I think we need to kind of refocus ourselves. I visited Potomac Heights Elementary in Washington and gave a Silver Hammer Award for superior maintenance. Visited Emma K. Dow School and applauded the school maintenance program there, Barbara Ingram School for the Arts. I was there on school construction issues, but Washington County does a great job, and I guess I'd like to ask, since 91% of this year's budget request, according to Dr. Lieber, is associated with deficiencies of existing facilities. Mm-hmm. Sure if I got that percentage right, but that's a pretty astounding number. basically, it's the old home ownership concept of repair your deck and repair your roof and keep things up, and you'll save money in the long run. Maybe you could give us a little oversight of what your system has done to preserve the upkeep of existing facilities.
Oh, great answer to that. Okay. With Dr. Morgan's leadership and our board support and county commissioner's support, we've been able to add additional trade people to our maintenance department, which has been very beneficial for preventive maintenance efforts, which has extended the life of boilers and chillers and even roof projects, things like that. So we're able to kind of stretch out these projects well below their life expectancy. The other thing we've spent a lot of money on that we're already seeing return, we've gone through an extensive light retrofit. So we're seeing our electric bill actually come down. Even though rates might not be coming down, our electric bill is coming down because we've done an extensive light retrofit throughout our entire county. We've almost replaced light systems in the majority of our buildings that didn't have high-efficiency lighting. So a lot of things like that, the window replacement project that we're making a request for today also will increase efficiency, energy efficiency, and those types of things. So that's the types of things. We do an excellent job with our maintenance department, just, again, trying to extend that life expectancy and be good stewards of state and county money.
Terrific. And I, on my tours, I take the maintenance employees with me, and I'm glad I do that because they're the most popular people in the school, as far as I can tell. All the kids know them, Mr. Dan or Mr. They're all, like, right there. And
they know every kid's secrets because
yes.
The kids talk to them. The school secretary and the school custodian.
Anyway, it's an important priority, and appreciate your jurisdiction's attention to it.
Thank
did
you.
Have just one other priority I wanted to mention, which is financial literacy. As you know, the number one reason why young people are rejected by the military and are unable to get security clearances for jobs with the federal government, it's not run-ins with the justice systems. It's not drug use. It's bad credit.
Bad credit.
And A, they don't understand budget, debt, credit cards. B, they don't understand the negative impact it has on their employment and their careers. It's not even close either. I think for security clearances, the reason that they are given for 50% of all rejections is financial considerations. That's the official term. The next leading category is 17%. So I am interested in the fact that Allegheny, your neighbor, and Carroll and Talbot require a standalone course in financial education in order to receive a high school diploma. And Baltimore County and other systems around the state have some terrific programs, like in Baltimore County, the Lansdowne Academy of Finance. But I can't understand why a graduation requirement isn't in place for all 24 jurisdictions. And I guess I'd like to ask what Washington County is doing to ensure that the principles of financial literacy taught to our students. And if you could give me an idea of what the likelihood is of your system following the lead of Allegheny and Talbot and Carroll and adopting a standalone graduation requirement on your own without waiting for the state to pass a mandate.
Well, at this point in time, Comptroller, we have embedded in the curriculum pre-K through 12. And it's embedded in such a way so that every student is exposed. It's also been expanded and enriched in terms of our business classes. And in areas where we have students who need in-depth clarification, like our life skills classes, for example, we are teaching it very directly. As far as a state requirement, I will defer to our leader, Dr. Grasmick. As far as a local requirement, we have some committees that are looking at how we can make it a standalone course and ways in which we can improve, because I agree with you, it's extremely important. It's even gotten some superintendents in trouble. Financial literacy kept them from getting hired in jobs and whatever.
You know, the kids often, when I go to visit these finance classes, they say, hey, our parents are as clueless as we are, and we're able to talk to them now.
It's very important.
The things we learn, you know, you close a credit card, it's not necessarily a plus for your rating.
In fact, it can have a negative impact. Well, great. If you could take it back to the local level and look, Dr. Ecker, or Chuck Ecker, is from Howard County, who is just finishing up in Carroll County, implemented a standalone financial literacy course at all eight high schools for a total cost of $37,000. And I think that's kind of the path we'd like to see systems explore, because otherwise the kids, let's be honest, don't take it seriously, or at least the vast majority of the kids for whom this information is crucial, who would never, ever, willingly go to an elective course. They're not self-selecting. I'm not criticizing them. It's just not there. But once they get it, it sticks with them. And so I would appreciate it if you could explore that and maybe get back to me.
Certainly will.
Thank you.
Was Dr. Grassman going to... The question of embedding something in a curriculum or having through the years or having a standalone last term course.
We had a legislatively mandated study or task force that was chaired by Senator Muse and Delegate Stein. And it included financial people as well as people from school systems. And the disposition of that, and our vice president of the state board, Charlene Dukes, who's president of Prince George's Community College, was actively involved. And the decision was made that the local systems had the choice of having a standalone course, but for every student within the state of Maryland, there would be an embedded financial literacy piece beginning, as Dr. Morgan said, in elementary school all the way through high school. It's also surfaced again in terms of the base realignment, because we know, as the comptroller said, that security clearances are an issue, and sometimes we only think about STEM and sort of the didactic part of it, but they need to understand security clearances. So the disposition of this is we do have the curriculum. We are working very closely with very prominent financial institutions, been very supportive to us. And it is the decision of the local school system if they wish to have a standalone course, usually in high school. So that's where we are.
But they all are required to have and to show how the subject is embedded.
Yes. We have that curriculum. Absolutely. And it is given to every local school system.
Mm-hmm. I must say, my senior year, I think I've told you this, my senior year in high school in California, second semester, we were required in social studies to have a sort of course, I guess, or curriculum that included learning how to do interest rates, how to balance a checkbook, how to buy a car. I mean, it was just part, because they figured people were sort of taking off second semester anyhow, so they might as well learn something useful. I think it was very useful.
I'd be very interested in sharing with you the curriculum that was developed by the task force.
But let me tell you, I also remember in elementary school, we had it, and we ran a little bank, a real bank, and everybody had bank books and kept them and learned how to balance it and everything. And that, actually, I think was probably more useful because it was hands-on. You were doing things. And we really saved money. But those were the old days.
Ours is embedded in all of the required math courses through high school, so we're sure that every student is exposed if they have to take the math classes. So.
And I appreciate the words of Secretary Grassmick, Superintendent Grassmick. That's very important, and I think it's to your credit that you're moved on that. I think it probably puts us in a very strong position compared to other states. But I think it's complimentary to also have this in senior year, as the treasurer was mentioning, because
And that's when we really need to focus and have young people look seriously at their financial futures, because
everyone's going to have to handle
otherwise them. they're going to spend 4 years at college and not think about it, and they get out of college and looking for a job and wonder why they've got these problems. And so I urge you to whether we're able to get the legislation through, which I think we should at the state level. We almost did last year, and I think it will go through this year.
I'll report back to you on our
But if you could, the individual route is obviously something that I'd like you to explore. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Talking about handling money, Washington County is among five jurisdictions which received allocations of the 2008 QZAB issue. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, absolutely.
And, okay, and it hasn't been expended, according to our records, and has to be within a certain period of time, the 3 years, or essentially it's lost. And so the question is, can you please talk either here or to my office about how it's going to be expended, or we'll roll it back and reuse it so that
right. The delay on delay on that project is not on the project. The project's complete. I think it was for $328,000 worth of QZAD money. So the project's complete.
$332,000.
They were taking a couple thousand. Sorry. We have a sub of a sub that hasn't paid one of their minority business enterprise people approximately $26,000. And we're working to resolve that issue. I think we'll have that corrected this week. So as soon as we finish that, then we can submit our state paperwork for the reimbursement.
That'd be great.
So
we want to make sure you get your money, and we can continue issuing.
Absolutely. We have no trouble spending QZAB money. We've actually requested, if there's additional QZAB money available that other counties don't spend, that we have means to spend that.
I don't think we've ever had a difficulty in the past. This is an unusual situation.
Okay. Well, you'll follow up, Joan, or they'll follow up with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for all your support.
Thank you. Vester, what's happening with Vester?
Vester received planning approval through the IAC, so we're hopeful that the Board of Public Works will also support the planning approval. And we're finishing up the feasibility study. We'll bring that to the board within the next month or so. So you can expect to see us here next year requesting construction.
Well, it certainly made a real impact when we visited the Washington County schools.
It really leads modernization, there's no question, and it is one of our schools with the highest percentage of free and reduced pricing. I think Vester's now about 92%.
Well, we look forward to seeing progress on it. That's great.
Thanks.
Okay, we're moving on now to...
Governor, actually, I think Ms. Schaefer, the Deputy Director of the Public School Construction Program, is going to make the motion for the actual program that's being recommended to you today. You will be approving 75% of the $250 million. And then the counties coming up are going to make their appeals for the rest of that 25%. And I know Ms. Jenkins maybe had some introductory remarks on minority business enterprise participation. So I don't know if you want to hear from Ms. Schaefer with the overall picture of Ms. Jenkins.
I think we were just overwhelmed by seeing Dr. Morgan.
Well, she deserved that, I think, going first. Exactly. Since she is first. But and then we have some announcements about all the schools are appealing. We have fewer schools showing up today, so I think we'll still be on schedule. Joan, you want to introduce yourself for the record and explain item one to them, please?
Good morning. I'm Joan Schaefer. I'm the Deputy Director of the Public School Construction Program. I'm here. I'm happy to be here, actually, to present to you the IAC, the Interagency Committee on School Construction's recommendation to approve the State School Construction Program for fiscal year 2012 in the amount of $250 million. The proposed $250 million statewide program comprises recommendations for specific projects in the approximate amount of $187.5 million and a statewide contingency amount of $62.5 million. And you are hearing appeals today from the LEAs for those remaining funds. That is the motion. I believe that we want to go through and continue with the appeals now. I wanted to present it before you so I didn't have to stand up here at the end and do that.
So then at the end of the appeals, we'll take your vote on the 75% that they're recommending, and then we'll come back in May. Let me just be clear then. We have obviously 24 subdivisions mm-hmm. in the state. Of the 24, five subdivisions are not appealing. We are hearing appeals from 19. Of those 19, five are appealing but not appearing due to concerns. And those five that are appealing but not appearing, and I have paperwork I will hand out to you, I want to make sure for them that they know that they're on the record and the board members will carefully consider their appeals without their appearances today. Allegheny County, Cecil County, Harford County, Garrett County, Wicomico County. So that leaves us 14 to hear from. We've already heard from Washington County, and our next school then is...
Actually, we're going to hear from Ms.
Jackson. Luanda, sorry.
Thank you. Yes, good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, Luanda Jenkins, Special Secretary, Governor's Office of Minority Affairs. I am pleased to provide a very encouraging update about minority participation in public school construction. Just by way of history, about 3 years ago, we started working closely to ensure that the state funding that supports public school construction at the local level also supports our state minority business goals. And thanks to the leadership of Dr. Grasmick in working with all 24 school subdivisions, they have all adopted the state's minority business enterprise program and policy. And we have been working aggressively to get really good outcomes for minority participation. We started off in fiscal year 08 at 12%. We moved the number to 16% in fiscal year 09. And at the end of fiscal year 10, we closed at 19%. And you have before you a mid-year update on public school construction activity for minority business. And we are at 31% with about half of the school systems reporting activity, which means the other half of the schools have not entered into projects that have been counted yet for minority participation. So we're really encouraged with the growth and the way in which school systems throughout the state have embraced incorporating minority firms in their projects and school renovation projects. And it's been a pleasure to work with Public School Construction Office. We've been joined at the hip for a couple of years, moving around the state and really working with school systems so that they could implement this program and do so in a way that is effective and makes it work.
Great. Well, that's a very positive, strong step forward. We need to talk about stormwater regulations and how they impact. Are there things that you all have been dealing with? We'll call Cecil County.
I think Frederick Cecil is one of the ones that is could not come because of the weather. I have the letter, and Frederick County is here.
Good morning.
Good morning. Hey, do we need those bright lights in the back? And we're joined by Chairman Conway from.
He's here for Somerset,
but also takes a profound interest in all education-related issues.
Yes.
Right.
One minute.
I'm Brad Young, President of the Board of Education for Frederick County, Maryland. Accompanying me today are Dr. Linda Bergee, Superintendent of Schools, Ray Barnes, Executive Director of Facility Service, my brother Glenn Young, President of the County Commissioners for Frederick County. In addition, I'd like to recognize Gail and Claggett, one of our great delegates up from
Hello,
Maryland,
Delegate.
So,
how are you, sir?
I'd like to start by saying thanks to Governor O'Malley and Comptroller Franchise for your visits out to Frederick last fall. And Treasurer Kopp, I enjoyed seeing you down at the universities at Shady Grove and years through the community college efforts. So we're here today to appeal our school construction funding requests. The list of our project requests have been provided to staff and are included in our testimony. We come before you with the understanding that through these difficult economic times, it's going to be tough to fund some of these, but we feel it's important as representatives of our community to present you with the most pressing school construction funding needs for your consideration. At the local level, we feel that we're doing our part to address the many issues associated with school construction needs. The County Commissioners and Board of Education have jointly supported a program of school construction that will reduce the number of overcrowded schools while addressing the renovation needs of our oldest schools. Most importantly, the county commissioners regularly forward-funded projects so that projects could stay on schedule. In addition, the county commissioners have adopted an adequate public facilities ordinance to regulate new development. Impact fees have also been instituted, and local transfer taxes have also been used to help fund school construction projects. In support of the county commissioners' forward funding efforts, we have placed the state funding for forward-funded school construction projects as our top priority. While our needs are significant, we recognize the need to first fund and support those projects that have already been completed in the past. Having noted this priority, we must look to the future. In the next 10 years, the Department of State Planning predicts Frederick County to be the fifth largest enrollment increase in the state between the years 2008 and 2019. Since 1990, with the state's help, we have carried out an aggressive building campaign, yet we're still operating 18 of our schools over 100% capacity, and we're still providing education in 156 affordable classrooms. In addition, our schools are aging. We have 25 schools in part or whole over 40 years old. It's imperative that we continue our efforts to address the physical and instructional needs of our aging schools so that we can provide the required curriculum to our students. We feel strongly that our ability to provide a proper academic and instructional program to our students will help their ability to achieve high standards. We appreciate and support the governor's budget funding commitment this year and look forward to the state continuing as an active partner with us. Toward this goal, we request the state that the state fund the projects as we've requested. I do want to mention also Frederick County is very proud this year to have the State Teacher of the Year, Michelle Sheriff from Urbana High School, who just recently has been notified she's one of four finalists for the National Award.
That's
so
great.
We're excited and expect to bring that trophy back to Maryland, which would be a great honor. I did also want to acknowledge before Dr. Bergie, who I think many of you know will be retiring this June, makes her comments, and my brother addressed Comptroller Franchot, your comments on the financial literacy. As a certified financial planner and as somebody that teaches personal finance at Mount St. Mary's University, it's certainly an issue that's very close to my heart. I've been active in Frederick County Public Schools as a consultant and advisor to the Academy of Finance through the Career and Technology Center for over 15 years, and the first student that I helped with that who also interned with me for 5 years is graduating from Georgetown Master's Program this spring and has already been hired as a fixed income analyst at T. Rowe Price starting in June. In addition to that, Junior Achievement is something that I've been active with, which is a great program, actually the headquarters in Lutherville, Maryland. I've taught first through sixth grade as well as for 13 years at TJ High School, went in the entire school year. We started a company, went through capital, developing a product idea, implementing it. In every one of those classes, the students left there with the check in hand from either their stock investment or from sales commissions in the project that they did. So it is something, again, right now I have probably 15 students in my class at the Mount. They go through learning how to pick their 401k, their mutual funds, life insurance, mortgages, as you said earlier, treasure cop, how to buy a car, balance their checkbook. We go through all those. Many of these students are starting from ground zero, and I think embedding it in the high school is one way to start about it, but I think as a standalone class, it certainly would have a lot more emphasis, and so I certainly would support the efforts.
Well, that's
to do that.
Water in a desert as far as I'm concerned. Thank you making that comment. But I met someone very similar to you with a big financial background who teaches a similar course to seniors at Loyola University in Baltimore. And he said, student after student comes up to him and said, gosh, why did we have to wait until the last year of our college to get this information? Why didn't we get it earlier?
Yeah, and I'm also pushing for it to be a required class at the collegiate level as well, because right now it's an elective and so very few, generally only the business majors take it.
Yeah, they're self-selecting. Yeah, right. That's terrific. We applaud them, but yeah, it's the other 99% that we need to reach out to. I see Delegate Claggett's back there. Is he going to get up and say something? Because he's very distinguished.
Yeah.
Come on up here.
Just here to support the efforts of the Board of Education and the County Commissioners. And in particular, I want to thank Superintendent Bergie for her great job. She is retiring.
And she was a student where I was a vice principal, but I was only 19. Thank you.
I don't quite remember it that way, Delegate. But I'm getting old, too, so my memory could be faulty. Good morning. I guess it is still good morning. First of all, before I provide my testimony, I want to personally thank Governor O'Malley for his budget that he proposed last week, which continues to support and acknowledge the importance of funding public education in Maryland. We appreciate that. And for Dr. Grasmick's vision and leadership, which has ensured that those resources that were provided have continued to make us the number one school system in the nation. I also want to thank you for the opportunity to share with you our capital requests. We are requesting the repayment of construction funds for three projects: the new Langenore High School, which opened this past August, additions to Walkersville and Carroll Manor Elementary Schools, and then also we're requesting new funding for the addition and renovation of Lincoln Elementary School. The three projects, Langenore, Carroll Manor, and Walkersville, were funded by our county. Again, they're open. They're wonderful for our students. The Lincoln Elementary renovation project's designed, and we're ready to begin construction. And as always, Frederick County is faced with the challenge of making substantial investments in new seats to address enrollment growth. In the past, we're continuing to have a smaller enrollment growth than what we saw in the past decade, but it's still there, as well as then just addressing all of our renovation needs of our older schools, particularly at the elementary level. We've had a very aggressive program at the elementary schools in the recent years, but many of our students are still receiving instruction in overcrowded and outdated buildings, and we're just not able to deliver the same quality program, particularly with STEM, particularly with the technology piece. In addition, our students are changing. We're much more diverse. Our students, unfortunately, we have an increase in the number of students coming from poverty, and we have a 700% increase in the number of students who do not speak English as their first language since 2005. Again, we look to technology to provide many interventions for those students, and we just don't have the infrastructure in older buildings to be able to access that technology. No school in Frederick County is more in need of renovation than Lincoln Elementary. It was originally constructed in 1922. There have been a couple additions in 1938, 53, and 74. And other than just routine maintenance and repairs, there have been no significant renovations. It does have a free and reduced population. 75% of their students come from poverty, so it is one of our high-need schools. We realize that our funding request is substantial, but each project reflects a real need for real kids. They've been in the development planning stages for many years, and as I said before, some are finished, and we really do need the state's partnership to pay back those funds. You have details about each of the projects in your packet. I'm not going to bore you with your details because I'm sure you'll be able to read those. But I will just emphasize, again, our plans for Lincoln will be there's two buildings right now. They are across a busy city street from each other. We will be demolishing the oldest building, the B building, all but the historical part. We plan to build a high-performance, energy-efficient building with silver LEED certification. Planning approval has been granted. Design and permitting is completed. The county has provided us with just enough funds to begin the demolition and site work. So that is a high priority for us. There are systemic projects in our request as well. And it's important to note we've asked for no new project approvals in recognition of the very tight fiscal times this year. Our goal was to catch up on the things that have been forward funded, and we urge your support and partnership in helping us do so. Thank you.
Governor, Comptroller, State Treasurer, and Governor, I'd like to echo also, I know that you're facing challenging times like us all, and I appreciate that, and whatever the state needs to do, they're going to do, and whatever hand we're dealt, we'll deal with, and from the get-go, I like what you presented so far. So hopefully that will stay the course. And on behalf of Frederick County, we just want to show our appreciation. I'm Blaine Young, President of the Board of County Commissioners. I'll keep it short and sweet. appreciate the opportunity to present a request for reimbursement funds that were forward funded by the county. So construction of new Langnor High School, additions to Walkersville Elementary and Carroll Manor Elementary, and the renovation addition to Lincoln Elementary School could begin. Langnor High School and Carroll Manor Elementary addition opened for students in August 2010, and the Walkersville Elementary addition is nearing completion. All three of these projects received forward funding from the county commissioners in prior years. Lincoln Elementary renovation addition project is designed and ready to begin construction. The bulk of requests is for reimbursement of forward-funded projects. The Board of County Commissioners assumed a substantial financial burden in forward-funding these essential construction projects, as well as major renovation, repairs, and maintenance of existing schools and facilities in our county. We strongly urge you to support of these projects we submitted to you today and your continued commitment to honor previous funding obligations. We were sworn in on December 1st. A new board, majority new board of commissioners, and my goal before I leave in 4 years, because I plan to do one term, is to see Lincoln High School, hopefully Oakdale Elementary, and North Frederick. They would be major accomplishments. And Comptroller Francho, I appreciate your remarks. Best teacher I had was Dan Piper, taught me business math. I'm a small business owner. I have over 100 folks that work with our company, and I never forget that class because it taught me how to make things balance.
Yeah.
So, thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner.
No.
Go ahead, Treasurer.
The county is the county budgeting county funds for school construction this year, or is this all repayment of previously forward funded?
Yes.
So there's no county budget for school construction this year.
Yes, there is county budget for school construction.
That's what I'm trying to understand.
Yes.
Other projects.
So we forward funded several projects, and then there's money coming in, but we're trying to recapture what was forward funding.
Right.
To keep the other projects moving on, but we don't have enough money.
We use the forward funding.
Yeah. We don't have enough money to recapture that to keep.
Thank you.
If I could just state for the record that when I was up in Frederick recently, I met with Senator Young and Delegate Claggett. And Senator Young produced some photos of Delegate Claggett when he was 19. He had a full head of hair, and he looked terrific.
He looks terrific now.
Yes, he looks terrific then and now.
Thank you.
But my Young family has had a lot of success up in Frederick County, and we... it's going to be a tough job, and we appreciate what the family does as a whole. Which one has the radio show?
That's me.
Yeah. Your dad said I should go up and be on the radio show someday. He said it would be very stimulating.
3 to 6, Monday through Friday.
But let me ask, you mentioned maintenance. Obviously, we don't have the money to build the new schools that everybody wants. We got to take better care of what we have. I'm sensitive to the history of the elementary school, but what is the county doing as far as really refocusing on, you know, maybe just reaching out to business, for example, and saying, can you help us with some exterior power washing, and can we get everybody involved in taking better care of what we have?
Well, we build our schools to last. We look at a return on investment lifespan cycle. So we try to use quality materials to lower our ongoing then maintenance costs in terms of our flooring and our finishes. We also have been able to maintain our maintenance budget in the school system side at the same percentage of our budget over the last few years despite some economic challenges. We do have a preventative maintenance program in place to maintain our equipment so we have optimum efficiency and extend the life of our systemic equipment. Our schools were inspected by the State Public Schools Construction Program, 11 of them, and all of them received either one of the top two ratings. Two were at the top and were recognized here previously. We also are participating in the Indoor Air Quality Tools for Schools, and we're one of two Maryland counties that we received awards and recognition for our indoor air quality program.
We're working on a lot of energy savings. We are reaching out to outside. We are part of the Potomac Conservancy to do a tree canopy project. We are one of two counties participating in the Project Sunburst grant offered through the Maryland Energy Administration. So we have solar panels at on the roof of Oakdale High School.
Right.
I could go on and on, but there are a number of ways which we are reaching out and partnering outside of the school system.
Commissioner Young was going to say something, I think, about community involvement.
No, just say that working with the business community, looking at other opportunities to generate money for school renovation and or construction. So the business community has reached out to us and wants to come forward to talk to us about opportunities of what they would call a school mitigation fee to where, you know, people could get back to work in certain industries and also generate money for school renovation and or construction. So we're looking at that.
Excellent.
Trying to think outside the box.
Do you talk with the either other superintendents or MACO about these things so people can learn from